I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, CM Jew, the best Jew in the world. And on this episode, episode 53 of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, we go back to 1992, where we take a look at the night that brother faced brother-in-law as Bret Hart faced Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, for the Intercontinental Championship. All that and more right here on CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. If it sounds like I'm going to be a bit quiet tonight, that has to do with the fact that, well, I have relatives who don't understand podcasting, and as such, I have to be a bit quiet tonight. So, for all those who hate the whole ending, I'm the best Jew in the world! You're getting your wish, because I'm going to have to be a little bit quiet. But that does not take away from the intensity or the excitement that we have right here on CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. Actually, to start off the show, we're getting really, really close to both NXT TakeOver Brooklyn and SummerSlam, both happening in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. So it's just a 1-2 punch. It's really like over 48-hour period. Just a bash to end all bashes for the summer. This is the end of the summer party. Oddly enough, it's happening on the weekend right before I start school, so that's kind of why I'm looking at it like that. And I couldn't be happier. It's like, it's so far looking at the card, which we're about to go over. I really can't wait for either of these. And I want next weekend to be this weekend. In fact, if it was this weekend, I wouldn't be doing the podcast right about now, because I'd actually be sitting there watching NXT TakeOver, which we will actually start over. So let's look at some of the matches that we know is on the card. We'll start off with the match that's more than likely going to be, if the Kevin Owens debut is any indication, to be the opening match, and that's UHA Nation, aka Apollo Crews, making his NXT debut. I've heard so much about this guy. I've seen a couple highlight videos of him. I can't wait to actually see him in action. Without a doubt, of the big recruiting class that was a couple of months ago brought into NXT, he was obviously the most sought after and most highly prized recruit. So to see him make his debut finally is very exciting. And again, one thing I actually like, and I say this because I heard Kevin Owens talked to Chris Jericho about this on his podcast. And I think it's wonderful what NXT does. Is, you know, when somebody comes in, the rule is basically you sit for a month and you watch. You know, it doesn't matter how big your name is, you know, how big you are, what your internet fan base following is. You sit for a month and you watch everybody else. You know, basically sort of almost sort of a Young Lions thing that they do in Japan, just without all the, you have to scrub the mats and do all this. But, you know, again, it's that, you know, it doesn't matter what you did in the past. This is WWE. This is NXT. This is a whole new ball game. And I think it puts people in a great mindset. And, you know, of course, listening to Kevin Owens talk about the fact that, you know, it was him, the day of Tommy, and Finn Balor all sitting together. Just, that's a sight I wish I could see. But, and look where they are now. So I definitely think it works. So that's going to be interesting. I'm going to be very interested to see who he ends up facing as well. Hopefully, you know, this doesn't force that person to retirement like Kevin Owens seemingly has now done to C.J. Parker, who one of the latest news is that C.J. Parker is retiring. This is only a couple months after he, you know, left NXT to go hone his craft on the independent circuit. So hopefully that doesn't happen to this guy, but very much looking forward to Apollo Crews and his debut match. Next, I'm trying to think of, because I know there's a match, and what is a, I'm not going to the champ, I'll go to the championships last, but in what is going to be a match that I pretty much called weeks ago from about happening, because they did that little vignette with him that set it up with Baron Corbin. You have Baron Corbin versus Samoa Joe at TakeOver. There's a couple things I'm going to be looking forward with this match. One is, this is going to be the biggest match of Baron Corbin's career. This will show you and show the world, and hopefully me, just where Baron Corbin is in his development. Because he, you know, really is still kind of green. You know, he's really only been on the scene for about a year. How much has he grown in that year? He's seemingly gotten better. I really liked his mic skills on the last NXT episode. I thought that was great. That, of course, set up this match. And so, again, just a big bruiser, you know, again, has this thing against all these indie stars who are coming in with these big fan bases and getting these chances, while he's the homegrown talent who's just dominated. The story writes itself. I love it. And, you know, it's, again, a great big opponent for Samoa Joe to face. Obviously, Samoa Joe is more than likely going to win this match, because, again, a lot of people are high on him, and I expect him by the end of the year to be on the main roster. Of course, I expect him to be facing John Cena at WrestleMania. That's just my pick for my dream match. Because, of course, you want to talk about something that will put butts in seats. As far as independent wrestling fans, the match everybody thought would never happen, but actually happening right after Steen versus Cena, was more probably bigger than that was. There's probably two matches that were bigger than Steen versus Cena that we now have seen. And that's Joe versus Cena and Styles versus Cena. And literally it is, in those two matches, you have two people to help make TNA versus the man who helped make WWE and the new era. And basically the three wrestlers that dominated the wrestling scene in the 2000s. It's what everybody wants to see, is string match potential. But in regards to Corbin versus Joe, I expect it to be a very good match. I think it's a match that could actually potentially steal the show if Baron Corbin has improved that much. It has the opportunity to just be a fantastic match. And that's all you need in NXT, is opportunity. You know, we've seen so many matches that on paper, like, yeah, but can this really be as good as what the main event is going to be? And it turns out to be that. I look at the last NXT special, or not special, but TakeOver special, where Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks, not only were they better than the main event for multiple reasons, but turned out to be a match of the year candidate. So it's just, All you need is an opportunity, and I expect big things out of this match. Next, speaking of dream situations, Tyler Breeze versus Usain Thunder Liger. Again, that checklist that Triple H is just checking off. Like, we're gonna bring this wrestler in, and this wrestler in, and this wrestler in. I never thought I'd see the day when Usain Thunder Liger would be in WWE ring. And I can't wait. This may be the match I'm looking forward to the most, because the pageantry and everything. Tyler Breeze, just a big honor for him to face Usain Thunder Liger, and I know he's up for the task. You know, Tyler Breeze is one of the most underrated wrestlers in NXT right now. He just puts on stellar great matches. Just see his matches with Sami Zayn, for instance, and with Tyson Kidd, and all sort of the NXT TakeOver events from last year, and that will tell you everything you need to know. So I expect a great match, a fantastic match. I don't know who's going to win, but it's going to be fun to watch. And that takes us to our championships. We have Bayley versus Sasha Banks for the Women's Championship. You know, here's the thing. I know that it's very obvious that Bayley is more than likely going to win. Because, again, you know, you now have Sasha Banks on the main roster, and you need to move the title to somebody else on NXT to keep the story going and everything. You know, but one thing I think especially NXT has been great at is, you know, building excitement and not disappointing. Yeah, we know who's going to win, but we also know it's going to be a great match. And Bayley can go, you know, to me, this is the match of the wrestlers that proved me wrong. I didn't think Sasha Banks would be this good. I certainly didn't think Bayley would be this good. But especially Bayley is an example of a wrestler that, you know, female wrestler doesn't be sexy and yet the crowd can love. You know, it's one of the things is on the recent NXT specials is they kept going to that one girl, and I understand why they're showing the girls. But there's also guys, and for that matter, before those girls were into her, there were a bunch of guys that were supporting her, not because they wanted to, you know, do her or screw her or whatever, but because, you know, they liked her gimmick and they supported her and they wanted her to get better. And, you know, you have to remember those fans too. And just like, they made themselves into great wrestlers. They put on some great matches. And I'm sure this will be no different. If it sounds like I have high expectations for every match, it's because I have high expectations for NXT in general. Then you have the Tag Team Championship match. Now, this one's probably the most confusing. You have Blake and Murphy defending against the Vaudevillains. Mostly why everybody's confused is because everybody was expecting Enzo and Cassidy to get this spot. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. I'm actually predicting this is where a swerve will happen, where maybe the Vaudevillains get knocked out backstage and they do an open challenge, or something will happen on this coming episode of NXT TakeOver. And, you know, either way, I expect somehow Colin Cassidy and Enzo Amore to be in this match, or be involved in this match. Or at least for that matter, I expect them to be in some type of match at the Barclays Center. Because there is no way you're not going to have Enzo and Cass not in their hometown of Brooklyn, New York. And I give WWE major props for keeping the suspension. Like, will they be there? And mind you, if they are in that tag team match, I'm calling it right now. Enzo and Cass, your new tag team champions. The Mike Talker Skywalker and the man who's 7 feet tall and yet can't teach that. How you doing? Which brings us to our main event, which is now a ladder match. Finn Balor versus Kevin Owens. Now, I've gone back and I've seen the ladder match that Owens had. I think it was that final battle versus Zayn. Oh my god, I'm just salivating at this. This is going to be an excellent match. Obviously, Baylor is more likely going to win because, you know, Owens is on the main roster. There's an interesting rumor that he's paired with Heyman. And I like this rumor because I think what's ultimately going to happen when Hideo Itami comes back is that, you know, they're going to reveal that it was Baylor that attacked Itami, not Owens. So, you know, and that's going to be an interesting feud, Baylor versus Itami. Which will then more than likely set up maybe when Zayn comes back as well, his rise to the top as well. Though I also expect that when Zayn is healthy, he's getting moved up to the main roster. Because I'm just going to call this now, I think we're going to see Zayn Owens at this year's WrestleMania as well. Again, I'm calling this stuff like 6 months away. Who knows? But without a doubt, this match is just going to... It's going to be epic. There's going to be bodies everywhere. And somewhere Jim Cornette and people at Ring of Honor have to be proud. Because Kevin Owens is their guy. You know, it's Ring of Honor versus New Japan in this. And internet wrestling fans have to be happy. Wow, I didn't actually expect me going over just the card to take up that much time. So I think what we'll actually do... So we'll get into the review proper. And I'll save SummerSlam, the big event, which we'll definitely know more because we have some great matches to talk about for next week in the next review. But with that, let's get into our review, SummerSlam 1992. So SummerSlam 1992 had the tagline of the SummerSlam you never thought you'd see, presented by the World Wrestling Federation. Took place on August 29th, 1992, though aired on August 31st, 1992, to an attendance of 80,355 in legendary Wembley Stadium in London, England. It is, if the numbers that WWE reports on both WrestleMania 29 and WrestleMania 3 is correct, it's the third largest crowd in WWE history. Your Colton commentators would be Vincent Kennedy McMahon and Bobby the Brain Heenan, with interviewers Lord Alfred Hayes, Sean Mooney, and Mean Gene Oakland. Ring announcer was Howard Finkel, and your referees would be Mike Chioda, Danny Davis, Earl Hebner, and Joey Marcella. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into SummerSlam 1992. SummerSlam 1992 actually had three title matches. WWF Tag Team Championship, the WWF Championship, and the Intercontinental Championship, which were sort of the three title headline matches. Really, and you can see it if you look at the poster that they have, there's really four sort of signature matches that they advertise. On the poster itself, it has Hart versus Smith, which ended up being the main event, though they have it on the poster at the bottom, or at least the one I'm looking at. Then they have Undertaker versus Kamala, and the Legion of Doom versus Money Inc., with Ultimate Warrior and Macho Man, which were competing for the WWF Championship, being in the big picture. Though, of course, they would switch that with the Intercontinental, and that would be the final match. There were a couple of dark matches that happened on the card. This obviously was a taped event and then was aired on pay-per-view on August 31st. So some things were only shown in the UK. Two matches that weren't shown were the Bushwhackers, Bushwhacker Butch and Bushwhacker Luke, and Jim Duggan versus the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobs and Jerry Sags, with Jimmy Hart and the Mountie, which the Bushwhackers won. I think Duggan put Mountie in a headlock. And then the other dark match was Papa Shango defeating Tito Santana. Now, there is a third dark match that actually took place between the WWF Championship match and the Undertaker-Kamala match. And I think mostly because at the time they wanted Undertaker to come out during night, and so that allowed night to fall over the event. And also in between that, on the broadcast itself, they also had a special thing of Roddy Piper playing bagpipes with the famed Highlanders, Scottish Highlanders bagpipe band. But this dark match was Tanaka defeating the Berserker with Mr. Fuji. But on two matches that took place, we actually opened with one of our advertised main events, as the Legion of Doom of Hawk and Animal with their manager Paul Indrajean took on Money Inc., which is Ted DiBiase and Irwin R. Schleicher, a.k.a. IRS, with the mouthful itself, Jimmy Hart. I thought this was a really great opening match. Just sort of classic, DiBiase and IRS were a classic team, a great heel team. And again, they were sort of that finesse mat wrestler team. You know, IRS was the power, DiBiase was the technique, and they sort of finessed you and beat you up that way, where Legion of Doom were just straight up brawlers and just overpowered you. And so it was a good match, a good mix of styles, and just good back and forth contest, and really enjoyed it. There's some botches, but they could be forgiven. Again, just that entrance, mind you. By the way, massive entranceway. And, of course, the entrance by Legion of Doom on the motorbikes, one of the most legendary entrances, at least for LOD of all times. And then, again, I loved the ending of the match. You know, each team trying to set up their own sort of tag finishers. IRS getting in the way, and then of course the snap power slam on Ted DiBiase by Animal getting the win, and just the very sort of out of nowhere aspect of it that I thought was a very good end to the match. Here's where this SummerSlam though runs into some problems for me, because there are a lot of matches that are just, I think there's a reason that they really only talk about Hart versus Smith, which we'll get to. And one of them is, there's a, you know, for being this big event, there's a lot of sort of jobber set of squash matches here. Here's one of them. Nails versus Virgil. Now, if you've never heard of Nails, there's a good reason. Nails, I think, was only with the company for about 6 months. The wrestler, his real name is Kevin Wakolis. I hope I said that right. And from my reading up on his history, he was brought in to have this feud with Big Boss Man because he says while incarcerated, the Big Boss Man abused him because he was the prison guard. And so it was this feud that he had with the Big Boss Man. And, you know, Virgil was his friend, so we faced Virgil here at SummerSlam. Ultimately, this led to him facing Big Boss Man in a nightstick match that Boss Man won. And then he was set to feud with Undertaker. That is, until he apparently got in a fight with Vince McMahon in his office and physically assaulted him. In the most not surprising move ever by Vince, he was immediately fired. And his story is that Vince wanted him to do steroids, which I really don't believe. In going to the whole Vince McMahon steroid debate, I don't think Vince had to tell anybody to use steroids, because I think everybody was. And I think a lot of promoters who say they weren't doing the same thing are lying. You know, it's funny. It always goes back to that. I always go back to that thing, like, you know, Vince winning that saying, you know, I just wish Hulk Hogan wouldn't have lied, because, you know, when the case happened, Hulk had left and was about to go to WCW, and, you know, the whole idea of closure, I think Hogan said, which is a whole different story. Anyways, on to this. Again, just explain where nails came from, then me participating. Pontificating, or that big word right there. But obviously he wasn't in WWE for a long time, just about 6 months. And really, just in this one feud, and this was a squad smash to sort of continue that storyline. Really, there was nothing to nail style. He just, like, pounded him, and made him pass out to a headlock. It's really unimpressive, to be quite honest. I'm like, what am I watching? You know, and the thing about nails that I also find interesting is, like, these colorful characters that would be the mainstay for the WWE. It really shows that 92 was sort of that transitional period into the sort of the bad part of the WWE of the 90s. I mean, they had some good characters, but especially, particularly when Nash and Razor Ramon left, you know, 94, 95, 96. Of course, that's when, and of course, 96 is when, you know, in a way, I think Nash and Razor Ramon leaving was a good thing, because ultimately showed that, you know, your two biggest are leaving, and even though it's just for money, but still, they're leaving this. And now they're beating you, and now we have to look at her talent and the colorful characters. And then, of course, that ultimately led to the transitional change to the Attitude Era that worked, that helped WWE win the war. But, you know, you see sort of that approach to more colorful characters like Nails. And these characters where you're looking at Vince and going, just what in God's green earth were you thinking? Really, what were you thinking? I would like to know. So, yeah, not much of a match, kind of a squash. And what turned out to be an interesting, fun match in strange ways, we have Shawn Michaels versus the model Rick Martel in a singles match where both men had a gentleman agreement not to strike each other in the face. In a way, this was kind of like heel versus heel, so that made it a very interesting match, and it ends in a double countout. And of course, the whole fight over the sensational sharing. I mean, there was some great back and forth, mat wrestling here, but it ultimately just felt like a lot of times they were stalling. And again, that whole heel versus heel, and there, if that's the case, I felt like maybe this type of match should have happened on, like, a Saturday night's main event or something, and then the payoff match where they're heart striking each other in the face should have happened here. But it just, the thing about this match is it always felt like they were stalling to get to the finish. I mean, taking your time is not a problem, but it just felt weird to be a match on SummerSlam, is what I'm saying. Our next match is our first title match, as the Natural Disasters, the tag team champions, which were Earthquake and Typhoon, faced the Beverly Brothers of Blake Beverly and Bew Beverly. with their manager. It's the Genius, mind you. The fact that this match went on for 10 minutes pretty much surprised me. I thought the Brothers did a pretty decent job of, jumping on Typhoon and keeping him out of the corner. And that was really the whole set of the matches that they were able to beat down on of these two behemoths, the smaller man, Typhoon, and keep him out of the corner. And then finally Typhoon tagged Earthquake in, and Earthquake just took care of them. This, again, I guess building the legacy of the champions, but it's like, especially the fact that the Beverly Brothers would just really become enhancement talent. Like, we couldn't find a better tag team to face the Natural Disasters at SummerSlam. The Beverly Brothers just never seemed like a threat to me. And that's ultimately what hurts the match. The match is okay by itself, but I think the Beverly Brothers just never seemed like they were a threat to the Natural Disasters. And then again after that, we have another squash match. We have Crush taking on the Repo Man, which I find funny. Because you have two former members of Demolition, Crush and Smash, facing each other. That's about the only interesting thing about it. Of course, Crush defeats Repo Man with sort of this pinchner, had the basically crushing the skull, I'll say. See, this brings up the problem, because the last four matches all have a problem. They were either squash matches, or it's just, they were, I didn't believe in the matches. Like, Nails, I'm looking at Nails, who the hell is Nails? Shawn Michaels and Rick Martel are dancing around, and mind you, I understand the story, but I think it's a story that should have been told on a non-pay-per-view show. And the payoff match should have been on the pay-per-view, same with the tag team champions. There should have been a more legitimate contender facing them on SummerSlam, especially when you have it in Wembley Stadium. And then, of course, Crush versus Repo, another squash match. I mean, I understand the concept that this was in Wembley Stadium, and you didn't want sort of, and while you started off with this great opening match, you didn't want the rest of the card to overshadow the main events. The final three matches. But I don't think you can be afraid of that. I think you have to put on a legitimate card. Not squash matches. You know, mind you, funny, I was talking earlier how basically Apollo Crews is going to be a squash match. But again, they're having that at the beginning of TakeOver. And that's sort of like, this is who I am. And it's his debut. And he's got to put on a good production to make you believe in him. But these were different, and these were all storyline-based, and it's just, I'm actually going to make a confession here. I did not watch this SummerSlam all the way through, and what I mean by that is, I remember the matches from watching last year. I was going to review SummerSlam 92 last year. I didn't end up doing it because of multiple things, which is why I'm reviewing it now. But it's like, I just remembered like how bored I was in the middle of this card. That literally, when I watched it last year, I fell asleep after the Crush Repo Man match and missed the Macho Man, Randy Savage, The Undertaker match, and Bret Hart versus the British Bulldog. Which is the three matches that I ended up watching this week. So it's like, that tells you about why I was afraid to rewatch them, because I'm like, oh my god, I'm going to put myself asleep again. Now, we did go back and watch the Legion of Doom versus Money Inc. match. So, ultimately, it's the big thing against this card is that middle of the card. To our second title match and sort of second big, or at least first big main event, or say second main event, we have for the WWF Championship, The Ultimate Warrior versus Randy Savage. This would be the longest match. And there's a whole storyline going on of, Mr. Perfect offered his services to each wrestler. Really, this is part of a plan he had going with Ric Flair because he wanted to challenge Savage for the title. Of course, I think Flair would leave soon after. I think around 93, Flair would leave. I could be wrong, so I apologize. But anyways, that whole storyline was going through. What to say about Macho and Ultimate Warrior? Now, I have to admit, I wasn't the biggest Ultimate. I was always a Hulk Hogan fan, so maybe I just held, and I'm still holding a grudge that Ultimate Warrior beat Hogan at WrestleMania 6. Probably I am. but no, it's just like, this is for the WWE Championship, and these wrestlers were still wrestlers from the Rock and Rolling Wrestling Connection. It really showed just the colorfulness of this and just their movement. It's just like, and particularly when you compare it to what is the main event, it just felt out of place. It felt like you could definitely see that the times were changing. You know, and that's the thing that's interesting is I just watched Hogan versus Macho Man because I watched that WrestleMania Rewind episode. And mind you, I watched SummerSlam 1988 last week. You know, there the cheesiness works, and it's, you can feel the different period, and you can feel what worked in different periods. And while it worked there, here was, I just think, a completely, completely different story. Again, it's like you felt tide turning. And when, and, you know, the thing about it is, when you put their cheesiness up against, you know, Hart and British Bulldog and just pure wrestling, it just, like, it falls apart. And really what hurt it is, it just felt slow. Like, this entire match felt slow, it felt like this match could have taken place in half the time. Obviously, they wanted this match to go on for a while. And then, of course, the whole confusion with the storyline, who's on whose side and everything. Ultimately, Ultimate Warrior wins because of count-out, because, you know, Flair and Mr. Perfect come to the ring, and they cause confusion, and then they lay out Ultimate Warrior for Macho to do the flying elbow, but instead, Macho goes for Flair, and Flair hits him in the leg with a chair, referee doesn't see it, and Macho gets counted out. They go to work on his leg. Ultimately, Ultimate Warrior helps him out, and they both head to the back. Overall, it is somewhat enjoyable, but it's just that this match was too slow. And it's like, I mean, you have all the signature moments by each wrestler hitting their signature time, and, you know, Ultimate Warrior feeling the power. Macho Man, of course, with all his great maneuvers, the bombs away, the jumping over the rope, and, you know, bringing the head off, the throat crashing onto the top rope. But it just felt slow. And then, again, also the cheesiness combined with pure wrestling matches that we'd see later just don't hold up as much. So obviously it was good that this wasn't the main event. And maybe that is the problem. Maybe if this was the main event, ultimately, maybe I'd see this better, but because it wasn't, and it just felt slow, and the pacing just felt off for this match. Now, oddly enough, they didn't, because there was a match in between, but as far as watching the show on the WWE Network, the next match is completely different in terms of pace, being that that match was, the WWF title match was 28 minutes, and Undertaker with Paul Bearer versus Kamala with Harvey Whippleman and Kim Chi was 3 minutes and 27 seconds, not including the time for them to come down the aisle. None of these times are including the wrestlers coming down the aisle. Undertaker wins by disqualification when, Kimchi comes in and attacks the Undertaker, and then Kamala lays him out. Before I get to that, mind you, Undertaker's entrance on the Hearst, awesome. Definitely one of my favorite moments of the pay-per-view. Yeah, that entrance was just epic. Another thing that is interesting is, I know there's a talk about how African-American wrestlers are reused now and in the past. I didn't know what to feel about Kamala's gimmick anymore, but same point in time, it's a gimmick that he'd been going for a long time with. And then the match I thought was excellent. Obviously, this was about building The Undertaker up. This was another squash match, but this one worked more because of its finish. Because Kamala didn't look weak. Oh, he did, but he didn't. He did look weak because The Undertaker obviously overpowered this much more powerful opponent. But at the same point in time, Kamala got his shots in particular with the disqualification. They knock Undertaker down, and he does the splash from the second rope and then from the top rope. And it's just one of the great moments of the SummerSlam to where, Kamala and them, they go out of the ring, and then, Bear's holding an urn and slaps the apron, and Undertaker just pops sitting right up and looks at Kamala. And the look on Kamala's face is absolutely priceless. I mean, I want that freeze framed for posterity. So even though pretty much a jobber match, I still enjoyed it a lot more, and I thought it actually worked in this part, being that it was an Undertaker match. It definitely made more sense than the Nails match and the Crush match. Interesting enough, all three of these sort of jobber matches, if you can call them that, were bigger men getting to win. That brings us to our main event. You have the British Bulldog with, at the time, the European and Olympic champion Lennox Lewis, before he'd become the World Heavyweight Boxing Champion. But with Lennox Lewis holding the British flag, versus Bret the Hitman Hart for the WWF Intercontinental title. This is a match that, up until the other day, I had never gotten to see. Like I said, even though I did watch it last year, I fell asleep and missed most of it, and I think I actually woke up just at the end. This match is everything it's been advertised as throughout the years. It was just a wonderful wrestling match. And it's something interesting I was thinking of while watching the match was, how interesting is it that when you think of Bret the Hitman Hart and you think of his most legendary matches, outside of his match with Austin at WrestleMania, that all matches he loses. I mean, you kind of think Yokozuna at WrestleMania 10, but really when you think of his match with Yokozuna, you more think of his match at WrestleMania 9 where he lost than you do the one at 10 where he won. You think about his matches with Shawn Michaels, in particular the WrestleMania Iron Man match that he lost. And, of course, the Survivor Series, the Montreal Screwjob. Even in WCW, biggest match was him versus Goldberg, where Goldberg gave him the concussion and knocked him out of wrestling. And Goldberg won. So, yeah. I came to the realization of how, effed up it is that really when we think of Bret Hart, we think of, you know, his most legendary matches, they're all matches he lost. But at the same point in time, I think that showcases that a wrestler's legacy is not built on wins and losses. Though they do matter, and you do have to have them win the championship. But really, they're built on, you know, prestige. And, you know, even though he loses all these matches, they're matches we look because they're epic, because he was the excellence of execution. And pretty much for him to get beat, the wrestler had to be on top of the game, and it was just an absolute classic for them to win. And it's no different here, just the back and forth and the competitive nature. You know, for instance, there's a spot where Bret Hart's going to the top, and British Bulldog catches him and knocks him off, and he goes to the top, and Bret Hart plays possum and lets him fling himself off the top and then miss. And it's just that execution of those events just worked all so well. And the great back and forth. The only thing I didn't like is the ending. And not that I don't like the roll-up, because I think it works well. I just don't think there was build-up into it, because there was the whole thing to where I think Bret had before had finally gotten the sharpshooter on. They had done something where they're both on the ground, and while on the ground, Bret twists the legs together and puts him in the sharpshooter. And this is after a whole match of working on the back. And Bulldog gets to the ropes. And I think they go to a replay or they go to a cut, and then all of a sudden you see Bret Hart bouncing off the ropes. And maybe this is more, maybe if they had stayed on him, it would have worked better. But he bounces off the ropes and goes for the sunset flip, and then, of course, British Bulldog catches and leans forward and gets the 1-2-3. I guess what I'm saying is I would have liked to see more of sort of a counter and a counter and then a reversal into it. Like, for instance, you know, Bret Hart chops, puts him against the ropes, goes to whip him, Irish whip him to the other ropes, Bulldog reverses it, telegraphs the backdrop, Bret Hart goes for the sunset flip, but Bulldog counters and gets the 1-2-3. That's a more organic flow into that, considering especially what they've done, rather than just, you know, Bret Hart deciding, you know, as he gets up to just go off the rope, go for a sunset flip, and lean forward for 1-2-3, and it happening out of nowhere. You want that build-up, and that's really the only bad thing I can say about the match. And because the match itself is just wonderful to watch. And definitely was matching in that crowd. Oh my god, that crowd. Just were from start to finish, the crowd was into it. And even though it's an open stadium, you heard that 80,000. Another thing I didn't quite like was they kept cutting back to Anna Smith, Bret's sister, and Davey Boy's wife. I mean, I'm glad she, I think it was a good part to where she was in the ring after holding up both their hands. And, of course, the hug and all of those things was done really well. And, of course, the firework with British Bulldog holding the title and Lennox Lewis waving the British flag was great, too. But it's just like, I would have liked to have seen, you know, the only time I want to see the camera cut away from the match is like a great example. There's at WrestleMania 22. Triple H versus John Cena. John Cena kicks out of, I think it was like a, what's it called? Darn it. Not pile driver. Triple H's weapon of choice. Is it a pile driver? Oh, damn, why can't I remember what it's called? When your brain stops functioning, folks. the sledgehammer. I think he had hit Triple H had hit John Cena with his sledgehammer, and John Cena ends up kicking out after the referee, like a long two count. And they cut to the crowd, and there's this guy in a suit and tie just losing his mind. That's really the only point where you should cut, and then they cut right back. I just felt that there was too many cuts to Anna and to the crowd, and we lost some of the action because of that as well. And again, that's, to me, that's nitpicking, because I can't really say much bad about the match other than I wish there was more build into that finish. But just an absolutely spectacular match. The pageantry, the build-up, just, it felt like this heavyweight fight. And how many times can you remember, how many match times can you count on your fingers where the Intercontinental title match got top billing over the World Heavyweight title? I'm like, this was Sasuke Nakamura versus Hiroshi Tahashi, whatever that Wrestle Kingdom was in 19... Because there was a Wrestle Kingdom where those two fought for the Intercontinental title and that got top billing. Great match, enjoyed it, and ultimately that brings us to the end of talking about SummerSlam 1992. So let's go over moments and matches. Favorite moments. Number 3, Legion of Doom coming down the entranceway on the motorcycles. Just an epic entrance. Number 2, Undertaker's entrance. That with that hearse was epic. And number 1, I'm actually going to say a tie here. Number 1 is the crowd during the Bulldog Heart match, and the look on Kamala's face when Undertaker sat up. It's just... Oh. I mean, the look is like, will stay in my mind forever, and the, and then, of course, that crowd just made that match so much more epic. And I guess that brings us to our top 3 matches of the night. Number 3, even though it was a jobber match, it's just such a fun match because of the entrances and everything. Kamala versus Undertaker. Number 2, Legion of Doom versus Money Inc. Just a great opening tag team match. And of course, number 1 is Bulldog versus Hart. An epic heavyweight match for the Intercontinental title that did not disappoint. And though I wish there was more build-up to that finish, it was a great finish. And it's just like, when he won, that crowd exploded. It's like right up there with the crowd exploding when Sami Zayn won. But on a much, much bigger scale. So those are my top 3 matches. End of the day, rating in, is this pay-per-view worth watching? It's ultimately what hurts this pay-per-view and what's the downside of this pay-per-view is, again, those 4, and really you can get on 5 matches with Warrior and Macho Man. It's just like you had these single matches that just felt disappointing, and it felt like it felt like torture. It felt like you were waiting time out. Like, I have to wait through these hours and wait through these matches to get to the matches I want to see. And ultimately, that hurts the viewing of this pay-per-view. Because as grand as... Because certainly, I think you should watch it once. But after that, just only watch the Hart. You know, Legion of Doom versus Money Inc. and Hart versus Bulldog. And maybe Undertaker versus Kamala. Just for the pageantry. That's really the only matches you need to see, but overall, outside of maybe watching it once, just to, like, see the entire thing, a lot of this SummerSlam is quite forgettable. You know, certainly, again, because of what Nails does and beating up Vince McMahon 6 months later, nothing really becomes of Nails. Crush doesn't get any higher than sort of the mid-card, I think. Ultimately, having a match with Macho, probably his biggest moment was him having a, or at this point being Crush after after leaving Demolition, was the Last Man Standing match with Macho Man at WrestleMania 10. You know, natural disasters would soon break up. Shawn Michaels, of course, would go on to greater things, but it's just like that. Ultimately, it's like I look at the particular. I look at Shawn Michaels versus Rick Martel, and I look at the tag team match, and I look at the championship match. I'm like, these matches could have been so much better, and yet they were such disappointments. So overall, really, the pay-per-view doesn't have a lot of watching value, but there are some great matches on it in the opening match and in the main event. So I give SummerSlam a 2 out of 5, because there really isn't much to watch of it. The pay-per-view itself is a 2 out of 5, but at the same point in time, I highly suggest at least watching, if nothing else, Bret Hart versus Bulldog, because the pageantry and everything is just so worth watching and watching again. So that's my view on really what turned out to be a very surprising SummerSlam for me, because I'm like, this could be epic, and mind you, obviously, it took me a year to finally review it, because most of the pay-per-view put me to sleep. So to me, a very surprising, considering just the myth that I heard growing up of SummerSlam 92. Because I didn't get to see it. I was kind of out of watching wrestling at the time and slowly following it, because at that time we had moved to Florida. I really actually got back into it. And 94. And I faintly remember watching Hogan lose to the Yokozuna, but that's a whole different story. I've already talked about that. And less painful memories, the better. But that's it for this review. If you have any emails or comments you want to leave me, remember you can send them at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Stitcher account and on our Facebook account, which you can find by searching for The Absolution Network on Facebook and on Stitcher. And don't forget to leave a comment on our website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're at it, make sure you check out all the other 132 production content. This, of course, includes Tom's Prerogative and Tom's Top 10, and, of course, the Intergalactic Graphic Review. There's going to be a big change coming. I'm actually going to announce it on Tom's Prerogative, so stay tuned for that as well. And it deals with me going to college. And also, make sure you check out all the other 132 production content, other members, Shintaker Kuro, his One Piece videos, his wrestling videos, his anime videos and his Let's Plays, Gian Ramos and his Toku videos, and so much more, the Anticast and everything by Relic. So much on the Absolution Network. And of course, there's the Comic Book Crazy site at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com and Tokyo SOS at www.tokyosos.132productions.com, and there's some news coming about those sites as well. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Make sure you check out all our friends in the sidebar. That, of course, includes Michael Bailey, Views from the Long Box, Maddie J, TWK, the WrestleCast, and Sleepy Psycher, the Critical Hit Podcast, and of course Scott Gardner and Tutu Freaks Podcasting Network. That's it for this review. Next week, I can't give the announcement, but you know, let's just say August is going to be after August, we're changing things up here at the network. But as for right now, we still have a regular schedule, and we still have hopefully two more SummerSlams to review. So, next week, we jump to the Attitude Era. And we jump to the night that Stone Cold Steve Austin faced The Undertaker. That's right, we're going to see the night that Triple H and Rock faced off in their epic ladder match as we review SummerSlam 1998 from the Garden. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world.
today I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, they bring me down to negative vibe. But I believe, yes, I believe. I said I believe. And I'm on two feet, one baby, right down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. And
I'm stealing my love will be holding and stealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now.
Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life but you're dreaming.